I'm Alan Combs. Welcome to Heal Planet. I want to welcome Dr. George Hart, who's an SDI Star Wars physicist who specializes in the application of supercomputers to the mathematical modeling of systems with extremely complex behavior. This is a gentleman who in 1992 received the prestigious British Rank Prize for his work in laser technology for, quote, benefiting mankind, especially in eye surgery, for having invented the excimer laser. What we're talking about here today, though, Dr. Hart, is something quite different. I'm curious to know, we're talking about the Merlin Project, and years ago I met a gentleman named Paul Guercio, who I sat down with, and I'd never done anything like this before, and he started telling me things like, well, you had trouble being born, which was true. I was a month premature. And he said, your father was gone a lot, and that's true. And who is a stranger telling me the stuff that I could not have known anything about? How could he have known anything about this? And so he and I became friends, and over the years, I became acquainted with his technology and predictive systems. And years later, you met Paul Guercio, George, and developed quite an interesting way of working with the future called the Merlin Project. Tell me about meeting Paul and what the Merlin Project is.
Alan, that was another experience in talk radio. Back in the late 1980s, I was listening to a Boston station, heard Paul in the air saying some very interesting things about time and the course of our lives. And he seemed to have a very clear-headed and concise approach to what he was doing that fascinated me. And I subsequently got in touch with him to see what he was up to. The backstory on all of that is actually fairly curious in that had it been the version of me 20 years before, I probably would have just shut off the radio. I was aggressively antagonistic towards any of these mystical systems, thinking that they were all just foolishness or self-deception or any of the other labels you might put on it. But sometimes fate has an interesting path in store for us. And 10 years roughly before I met Paul, I was at a transpersonal psychology conference near Boston. I'm a physicist, computer scientist, chemist by profession with PhD degree, but there are other areas that interested me. At that convention, I was sitting waiting for a talk to begin, and the gentleman next to me leaned over and asked if my birthday was May 22nd, which in fact it was. And I thought that this was either a very interesting magic trick or the universe was a lot more interesting and complicated than I ever imagined. It turned out that this was, in fact, an astrologer who specialized in May 22nd. I didn't know we lived in a universe where there were people like this.
I didn't know you could specialize in one day.
But this person did. He was actually fairly well known, was written up in Time magazine at the time, a professor out at Iowa State. And following up on that conversation, he really opened my eyes to what's possible in this universe. So jumping forward to 10 years, Paul seemed to be from that same ilk of somebody that had some inside information on parts of the universe that most of us are pretty unaware of. He had a system which he manually put together for essentially showing the course of our lives as far as periods of intense activity and other quieter periods, and some wisdom about how to use these charts. The problem was it was a massive undertaking to try to do this by hand. At the time, I was leading a really skilled programming team as part of the Strategic Defense Initiative Star Wars effort. And it occurred to me that nights and weekends, some of the people I worked with, particularly Lou Palumbo, might be challenged and find interesting computerizing what Paul had been doing manually for years. We spent about 6 months to a year intensively working on this on our own time and managed to capture in code what Paul had been doing with a hand calculator and a pen for years. With Paul's participation, we continually refined this. And today we have what is now an iPhone and Android app called TimeTracks that distills what Paul had dedicated 30 or 40 years in researching.
It's interesting to me that with your background as a physicist, as a renowned scientist, as someone who invented something that, I mean, you're responsible for people being able to see without eyeglasses in terms of laser eye surgery, that you would get involved in something that some people would say is a little bit woo-woo, right? So something about this must really appeal to you.
Well, part of it is the MIT background that I had, which was the rigor of that school combined with a few exceptional teachers, most specifically Houston Smith, who's probably the foremost scholar of religion and comparative religion in the 20th century, learned a lot from him about that other part of the universe that MIT usually doesn't touch on, that of meaning and pattern and coincidence. There were other remarkable teachers that came into the courses with Houston. At one point, it was Timothy Leary, who needs no introduction. and from that, learned that there's actually a rich history of renowned physicists like Werner Heisenberg collaborating with known psychologists like Carl Jung to explain coincidence, or at least explore it, to try to get their hands around it in the same way that quantum mechanics had led to an understanding of physics in our universe. And it turns out that coincidence and meaning and pattern in our lives is one of the great unsolved problems. That's where the physicist in me is intrigued.
So how is it that you can, these concepts of coincidence, synchronicity, how is Merlin used in an application, to apply, how do you apply that? Or how is Merlin an application that brings into the fore those concepts?
Well, it really is an exercise in applied coincidence. What Paul did was to study early cultures, you know, 5 or 6 millennia BC up to the present, and saw that there were certain time periods, whether it was 7 days that gave us the week or 7 years that's referred to quite often in the Bible, put together a small encyclopedia of the cyclic behavior. And then at this point, the heresy comes in. Notice that at its core, things like astrology were remarkable timing tools to alert people to when things were going to get very interesting. Again, there's a biblical reference that the three wise men read in the stars that something really interesting was about to happen in terms of human history and religion. So what Paul did was to put together these human time cycles along with the essence of what's behind some of astrology and worked up a system that could be computerized.
But it's not really astrology, is it?
No. It doesn't get into the personality types associated with many of those signs. It doesn't get deep into the weeds of saying what you should have lunch on this day. It drills larger and deeper into, okay, if there really is something to this, it probably works on a coarser scale, but with deeper meaning. Now, on the one hand, you could dismiss all of this as just silliness. But if you look at the basic patterns that astrology speaks to, which are harsh angles and soft or easy angles, you find that reflected in things in human history, like the swastika on the one hand with all of its hard right angles and the Star of David on the other. And you could not imagine things that were more diametrically opposed or spoke to two different sort of worlds of energy.
Are you saying that when you look at a chart, for example, those are the kind of angles you see, and some of them replicate a Star of David and some might even replicate a swastika? Is that what you're referring to?
And if you look at time cycles, as if you use the movement of the planets as your clock, you'll be looking for some of those changes in angles. Now, it's beyond our grasp right now to be able to explain why this would work at all, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't work. And it works often enough, accurately enough, to really catch your attention once you do this for decades, as Paul and I have.
Could you give me an example of where it's worked, where, for example, Merlin has been predictive, and you could say, hey, here's an example of, look at that. Look at what Merlin was able to do.
Well, I think the most significant one goes back to our early days in the early 1990s, where we looked at the former Soviet Union, a number of the Soviet satellite states around Russia at the time, these time tracks of the leaders over there. And the only conclusion that we could reach was that the whole thing was about to fall apart. Now, this is before the final days of Yeltsin, that this conclusion, this scenario did not make much sense, but it was undeniable. It said when it would start in high gear, how intense this would be, and how long the transition period would be. Similarly, just to give another one, which was fairly interesting in capturing the onset time of an event, the intensity of an event, and the duration of it, was the Second Gulf War, where time tracks, Merwin, Paul, indicated that once George W. Bush went into Iraq, that we could be looking at a 10 to 11 year event of high intensity. At the time, we were thinking weeks or months in the United States and in our media. It turned out to be something entirely different. Those would be two outstanding examples of the utility of Merlin and its accuracy.
We're talking with Dr. George Hart, who was co-founded with Paul Gersio of the Merlin Project. Dr. Hart is a physicist who's famous for his SDI technology, having worked with the Star Wars system and with eye surgery, eye laser technology, and invented the excimer laser used for corrective surgery. And also is fascinated, as you're hearing, with predictive systems that go back to ancient times. And in more recent times, to give a perhaps up-to-date example, you said, along with Paul, in the last election cycle, that when everybody thought Hillary Clinton was a sure thing, that she would not even be the candidate. And out of, at the time, it seemed nowhere, comes Barack Obama. But you were going really against conventional wisdom at the time.
Yes, and oftentimes it's difficult to come up with these public predictions that are so against the grain and at the time so nonsensical. But occasionally, the time tracks are just very unambiguous in the message they're sending. Similarly, right now, Paul has been fairly adamant that in spite of all the attention falling on Hillary Clinton, 2016 may also not be her year, that getting the nomination could be a real struggle. Getting the election seems to be out of the question. The news in the last 2 weeks points in a direction saying that Paul and Time Tracks and Merlin may well be quite right.
Well, as we're doing this, and we're doing this show in March of 2015, and breaking news as we're doing this is about Hillary Clinton's emails. And you wonder if this is the kind of thing which could start putting dents into a presidential campaign. And in fact, is there more where this came from? And does this have legs, this particular issue that's now front and center in the news headlines?
And it just adds to a situation where I think a large number of Americans, regardless of political party, are just so tired of hearing about Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush that we're almost 2 years out from the election. Everyone's already bored and sort of dismayed. Does it come down to this? I think with their own personal history, whether you go back to Whitewater or more recently Benghazi, this just may be the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's a bridge too far. We just can't keep going down this road.
Literally straw, because it sounds like in and of itself, it's not that big a deal. But you wonder if in aggregate, as you put it together with a series of other issues, that becomes a much more serious situation.
The question becomes, what's next? And I think both the Democratic Party and the nation as a whole is looking for a just pair of clean candidates without a semi-trailer full of baggage dragging behind them.
I'm interested in your view on the larger system. I mean, we've got Citizens United, which seems to enforce the notion that you've got to have huge money to run unless you're a Republican or a Democrat and have big money, not just any Democrat. It's the Republicans are normally the ones you think about and tied to Wall Street, but you've got to be a Wall Street candidate even as a Democrat. The idea of a third party or a person who's not tied into huge money making a change in this country seems almost not possible in today's world. Do you see on the larger scale a change going forward in terms of how politics is done and how we elect officials? Is there a sea change up ahead?
The sea change may actually be in our immediate wake. One of the interesting things, Alan, in terms of shows you've done in the past, is that while he was still alive, you had with Paul and I the founder of the Libertarian Party, David Nolan, on air.
Yes.
And he had a number of interesting concepts of wide impact, as does Paul. One was his two-axis theory of politics, that it's both an economic freedom question but also a personal freedom axis. You put the two together and you can map out most parties. But what we discussed on air with you was this very interesting notion of a 72-year cycle in American politics, where every 72 years we would have a massive sea change in the nature of the American government. You can take that from the early Constitution days of 1788, run forward 72 years, you've got the Civil War. You run forward another 72 years, you've got Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal, the tremendous change in the role of government. You shoot forward another 72 years, and it brought us up to 2004, which was a Bush midterm of his 8-year term. And we said on that, look, it can't always hit it to the nearest year, but let's just go one election cycle to the next possibility of major change. Well, we got major change that we still hear about in all the media day in and day out. And I think a number of people, regardless of party, will say the country will never be the same. This isn't the same country that I grew up in. Well, yes, this was exactly Dave Nolan's point. And it's an example of these major cycles in human history that if you're aware of them, can tell you when to expect change like we've just experienced. Part of what this means with Barack Obama and his administration is that government as we've known it, and even politics as we've known it, will never be the same. And I think that's part of what we're dealing with right now, that politics as usual, the way of conducting primaries, to many people is as boring as Sears Roebuck broadcast TV or the Oscar shows. It just doesn't work anymore. The other point you raised, that it's all the strange hybrid of a large dose of Wall Street combined with growing or gathering or in some cases even buying your own electorate in different ways, which is where Citizens United or the whole foo-for-our about immigration comes in. And we had never done things like this in the past. It's awfully hard to see where it goes in the future. I think the closest we may come this year to a third-party candidate might be Scott Walker.
Oh, really? Scott Walker is a third-party candidate?
Well, in the sense of being an outsider, not having many years under his belt in Washington, giving some of the Republican Party leaders heartburn, not really part of the old boy network.
That's interesting, because that's kind of what we got with Barack Obama, someone not from D.C., not from inside the Beltway, someone who's going to bring change from outside the typical system. And some people felt that that didn't live up to the hype. So I wonder if that can replicate in 2016. But what I really wonder is, going even beyond that, do we get beyond the two-party system? Do we get out of the money in politics? If Merlin looks further ahead, is there any way to predict? I mean, you can predict that there will be a change, but is it possible to predict what that change is going to look like?
Well, part of what we face now is, again, relying on Merlin and time tracks. If you run the United States itself based on July 4th, 1775, last year and this year and next year are periods of enormous change. Now, enormous change can either be good or bad, but I think for all of us that there is a sense that we are in the middle of something truly historic, a word that's oftentimes thrown around too much. And the disturbing thing here is that we have really fallen apart as a separate country. Coming out of the Second World War, there was a tremendous sense of national unity, having survived that conflict and then engaged in rebuilding the country after it. Similarly, after 2001, 9/11, 2001, there was a moment of national unity. In contrast now, the bad blood in Washington, even within the two parties, only reflects what's going on in the rest of the country. We really are at the stage of a marriage that's gone really bad to the point of almost domestic violence. This has always been an issue in the country. And if you're dealing with the kind of world of Merlin and Time Tracks, one of the interesting places you can see this is literally in the American flag. What you have there when you look at it is a visual reminder that this country, this group of states, this group of people has always had a hard time holding this thing together. You have the original 13 colonies represented by the stripes. And if you go back into the history of how hard it was to forge one nation out of that, it's disturbing. And then you've got the 50 individual states, all with their own style there. You can say, on the one hand, yes, it reflects national unity being held together. On the other hand, it shows you all these different fracture planes where things could come apart. And you've got Ron Paul in the last 2 weeks or so saying that he sees the advent of secession movement. And in the last few days, that Republic of Texas meeting that was visited by some federal agents wanting to take names and addresses and photographs. So we've lost something essential. And this, to me, comes back to the promise and the tragedy of Barack Obama. After 8 years too many of the strangeness of the George W. Bush administration, the promise of a true uniter, somebody that represented the best in America, was something that I think many Republicans even reached out to and grasped. I know I certainly did from a libertarian conservative point of view. And then it only became more of the same and then some, leaving us deeply divided.
By the way, you mentioned July 4th, 1775. Was it 76 or 1775 the year you're using?
No, it was 76.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. You know, not that a year could make a big difference. Could a day make a big difference in terms of a time track?
Not tremendously. It isn't hypersensitive to small time offsets like that, which is actually a virtue of the system. Month and day are important. Year can be important. Month and day within a 2 to 5 day window is what really counts.
I'm really fascinated by the notion. By the way, we're talking with Dr. George Hart. This is Heal Planet. And Dr. Hart is a Star Wars SDI physicist and who also works with Paul Guercio as co-founder of the Merlin Project, dealing with a really unique predictive system. And I'm fascinated by the notion of periods of time and what that means. Time, for example, you mentioned a 72-year cycle. The things happen to take place within 7, 14, 21 years. You know, 40 days, 40 nights was a very biblical number. Are there certain periods of time that we look at and say, here's this chunk of time is meaningful?
Very much so. You know, part of it may be biological, part of it may be psychological. It's why things like the 7-year itch in marriages is infamously true. And these aren't time periods imposed from the outside. It has something to do with our own psychology and probably our own lifespan. And that's part of like the thinking behind the 72-year cycle in politics. By 72 years, at least in the past, most people had passed on from this world, and lessons had to be relearned. One of the things that has happened to us with respect to what we're talking about here and noticing these time cycles, it is somewhat akin to a news story that appeared this week on how the advent of GPS satellite navigation systems in our cars have started to measurably weaken our ability to keep track of where we are when we're driving around. That as long as we have the GPS, we're fine. Uh-huh. But in the scientific article description of it, we've lost some kind of caveman ability to keep track of where we've traveled and trace our steps back.
We're so dependent upon its singularity, isn't it, that we're becoming one with computers.
And there are benefits there. You know, the ability to do Google searches, to reference a wonderful amount of information on the computers, is like an amplifier for our mind. But it can come at a cost. And my point here is that we're many people never even see the stars, certainly in an urban environment. It's hard to do. It's very easy to become disconnected from nature, from the external universe, and these time cycles, because we're so rattled by 17 emails arriving each 4 minutes that who's looking at 27 or 72 years time cycles?
You might miss a solar eclipse because you're looking at your BlackBerry, your iPhone.
Yes.
So we are so dependent. Kurzweil has done a lot of work on the issue of singularity. Ray Kurzweil, who I've had the opportunity to interview as well. And is that something you focus on too, the notion of man and computer, and that this is something that is going to change? I mean, Google Glass was going to merge us, but I don't know how successful Google Glass has been. And people, there may be a rebellion where we don't want to have to be so tied to something we have to wear in order to navigate our lives.
It's interesting and valuable you bring up Ray Kurzweil. I would take what he's talking about one important step further than I think he's considered in his famous book, The Singularity, where he's talking about these information tools all around us and where it may be leading. I think the key science of the 21st century that Merwin pushes up against to a degree and says there's something there that really ought to be looked at is that of information. And we're so buried in computers and computer science, we think we have that covered. Actually, no, we have computer science or information theory, which is mostly about how you represent information in zeros and ones, bits and bytes, how you stream it wirelessly or with an Ethernet. But what we haven't even taken baby steps towards is, what is this thing, information? Every cell in our body with its DNA is a strange dance of information. It's peculiar echoes of information that give us these coincidences in our lives that either can be significant or work at the level of a pun. And information now is growing itself. We have computers designing computers. We're in that world, but we don't have the even initial steps of like a biology of information or a chemistry of information, and we're very deep into it now.
It's interesting that you talk about what's happening on the cellular level, and I wonder if we you point out we're becoming so involved in the technology aspect of it. Are we losing the informational aspect of it? We're so fascinated by X's and O's and what it really looks like technologically. Do we really lose our ability to consume the information? And by the way, there's so much information. I feel it's very difficult to keep up with all that's going on. The internet has given us so much information so quickly, so many cable channels. Are we even able to consume it all? And I always feel I'm missing something because one person can't possibly be a good consumer of all the information that's out there.
There's that, which produces its own anxiety. The same set of papers, which I believe were reported in the Telegraph of the UK yesterday, indicates that this multitasking and dealing with the information overload is actually atrophying parts of our brains while amplifying other aspects of what we can do with information. But behind all of that, we may be becoming more and more insensitive to these little coincidences in life that can be very, very significant. For example, one of the best books on this whole topic of oftentimes coincidence or synchronicity is written by the author Alan Combs.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. And the universe sometimes works that way, that there are these little indicators, little puns that are out there, that information is not just you know, an ability to calculate a financial spreadsheet for a corporation, information on its own seems to be able to play these interesting games and sort of wave its hand at us sometimes if we're quiet enough once in a while to just notice what it's trying to tell us. And that's where you get into this dance of pattern, where how we represent information, information itself, intelligence, and consciousness. And it there's a tunnel vision that comes from the torrent of information that we're trying to deal with, which is almost like this GPS satellite navigation in your car, allowing you to go into a tunnel vision. You don't have to think about which 7-Eleven you passed or where that gas station was. You're just dead
ahead.
You
don't have to know where you are. It'll tell you where you are. You don't have to know on your own. I love the concept of coincidence, because there's a theory that there's no such thing as coincidence. And in terms of being a co-creator of Merlin, where at least patterns are predicted, is there really such a thing as coincidence, or are those things already in the DNA of your life, predictive based on when you arrived here on the planet? Is it really coincidence, or is it already foretold?
The interesting way you could look at that is that what you're saying is maybe it's carved in stone and very deterministic. There's an alternate view, is that maybe the universe itself is very alive and has its own kind of music. And this is what will give a lot of people a lot of problems, that perhaps the more you pay attention to coincidences in a serious way, maybe even keeping your own little notebook of them, the more they will fall into your life. That there isn't just a fixed quantity of coincidences. You can invite them at it and actually get very skilled at using them. And that we may work in that kind of world. An entree to all of this is the number 23, which has its own deep lore. You had the James Carrey movie dealing with Jim Carrey, the number 23, writers like Robert Anton Wilson. If you take the number 23, keep it in mind, and look at the number of Hollywood movies that slide it in there, you'll be astonished. And what you find most about the number 23 and the essence of everything we've talked about so far in this hour is that as humans right now, we really lack an ability to tell the difference between the totally random and the very deterministic or ordered. When you see in movie scripts or in real life people reaching for the number 23, they're oftentimes doing it to throw out what to their mind is a completely random number. Yeah, like 23 people turned up. But the funny thing about it is the number of times it's that exact same number they'll reach to be a totally random number. So that's it's almost like a yin-yang paradox built in there.
Why do you think that number? Why 23?
That would be its own hour show. That in terms of the number of things like the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati, conspiracy theories that go into this, you'd be getting into Da Vinci Code territory with some of it. The fact that it's a prime number, and it, you know, the first prime number you get to once you're out of, you know, the 1 to 20 that we're all kind of comfortable with, that we can't cover it with our fingers and toes. We're in sort of unknown territory out there. That there are all kinds of echoes of this even in our dollar bills and in some of the symbols on the back side of the dollar bill. It's a rich, rich heritage that gets back to the occult tradition, which has been sort of like a unloved stepbrother of religion over time. And the number 23 in many ways is the pathway to the occult, that if you want to step into this other world where things are oftentimes are strange and melty, 23 will get you there.
That's fascinating to me. And I wonder, is this just the way the universe happened to come together, that it just happened that way? I mean, who could plan for the number 23 to have such resonance?
Well, you know, it gets even into the fact that we have 23 chromosomes. Maybe it was built in from the beginning. Maybe it's a characteristic of this version of the universe that we're living in now.
Is it 23 years as well, 23 days? Is there anything in Merlin that also relates to the number 23?
Actually, no.
I wonder, because, I mean, I know there's a 21-year cycle. There are 7-year cycles, which would add up to 21.
Yes.
That's a very different kind of cycle, I guess we're talking about, than the number 23, or a different way of numbers.
And in terms of a hierarchy or a taxonomy of the world of strange, Merlin would be one of the most ordered. That would be like a Baptist conservative. When you start getting into 23 and its ilk, you can move into strange worlds as explored by Terence McKenna and others, where you start communicating with alien insectoid intelligences and, you know, UFO abductions and the rest.
Do you believe that, focusing back on Merlin, by the way, we're talking to George Hart. Dr. Hart is a physicist who's co-founder of the Merlin Project with futurist Paul Guercio. This notion, once again, and I keep coming back to this in my mind, it's such, it baffles, I mean, it's one of those great age-old questions. How much is predetermined? How much of it is predictive? And how much of it is random? How much of it is set in stone? And how much control do we have of our lives and what is going to happen to us? How much decisions do we get to make versus that which is preordained?
Well, that's the important aspect of Merlin and time tracks for anyone who's using it. A good current example of someone that you would expect to be doing remarkable things right now is the actor Bradley Cooper, who I believe has a January 5th birth date. And you could say, okay, he has a time track that would indicate that there's a tremendous amount of activity right now. But that doesn't tell you if it's going to be good or bad or what to do with it. And
is that determined to some extent by what decisions you make as an individual? You may say, well, there's lots of activity at a certain time, but the nature of the activity could be determined by choices you've made.
That's right. You know, he could either be a repeat Academy Award contender, or, you know, a criminal facing a life sentence for a life gone wrong. The useful thing here is that the time tracks, Merlin, these systems can give you an early warning, like, okay, here's a 5-year period where, number one, I should be pedal to the metal as far as trying to make things happen, and being very careful about the career and personal decisions I make during that period of time, because great things can happen. That luck may be on my side during that period of time. There are other periods of time where things drop off, and it's a warning from time tracks, just tiptoe through this zone. Just get through it the best that you can. An example of that from the Hollywood universe would be both Will Smith and Denzel Washington, who were enormously popular actors within Merlin terms, very similar birth dates. Will Smith, 9/25, 1968. Denzel, 12/28, 1954. And in Will Smith's case, you get a guy who was like the number one box office draw in Hollywood, and managed to just lose that. Right now, he has a film out, Focus, which is quite good. But he has a Kevin Costner problem of how do you rebuild a career after you torpedo it yourself? Time tracks from Merlin could say to somebody in that position, don't make any profoundly stupid nepotistic movies as you're coming into this period of time. Maybe it's a good time to de-emphasize, you know, some aspects of your personal life. Just get through this period of time. What I find unfortunate there is, I think in either of those two individuals right now, for many Americans, if you could trade any politician on the horizon, including the current occupant in the White House, for either of those people or Morgan Freeman, I think most Americans would take the deal.
The ability that one has now to take what the technology you're talking about and put it in one's own hand is here. You have an app, the Merlin app, available in the App Store, where people can download it and actually look at the time tracks and put in their date of birth or put in any date that they might want to start something or start a business and see the visuals for what that looks like. How does that work?
It's interesting. Going back 25 years now, when Paul was originally doing this, he was struggled to find some way to represent this movement of activity in time in a person's life. And there were some initial computer printouts that we provided him that were really just character plots, very crude. And the vision I always had was that you'd like to see this like driving down a road or driving past a mountain landscape out in the Rockies or something.
An actual map.
And you get into the tactile aspect of it that is perfect on the smartphones, where you can sweep with your fingers through the course of your life and see these waves of activity rise and subside. It's beautifully representative of what the experience is like and also what the basic system is trying to tell you. And for Paul and I, we're both just so grateful that we lived to see this take this form, because this is really the native form of it. This world of information we spoke about a few minutes ago was so vital in that. In our case, teaming up with a brilliant programmer out in California who works for Wells Fargo that wanted something interesting to do in his spare time, he built the apps. Then the strange team out in the Philippines came up with the Android version, a wonderful little group of giant pictures of Jimi Hendrix on the walls. The oddness of the world came into the building of the app. It's been valuable to us because now we have thousands of users that feed back to us things that they find work, people we ought to be looking at, events that we ought to be considering. And the thing becomes smarter because we now have folded more than just a half dozen or so of us into us. It is literally thousands.
So how can people get this app? Anybody can go to the iTunes store, I presume, and download it, put it on their iPhone or their smart whatever device and actually experience Merlin firsthand.
And we make it available at a remarkably low price of 99 cents. We would make the initial week available for free, except there are all kinds of complications how Google and Apple construct their app stores. So you can get a week taste, a week's worth of the time tracks for 99 cents, and then subscribe on a non-automatic renewal basis for another month, 3 months, 6 months, a year. Again, for a fairly nominal price. It's available, as you said, in the iPhone App Store or the Android Play Store.
And it's Time Tracks or Merlin? What should people put in to...
Time Tracks, spelled in a somewhat odd way, T-I-M-E-T-R-A-K-S.
Well, it's fascinating what you're doing. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, Dr. Hart, about Merlin, its trajectory, what it does. I think there's a lot more to talk about, but thank you for joining us on this edition of Heal Planet.
Thank you so much, Alan, and thank you for all the years that you've given Paul and I a venue, and actually it's conversations with you that have really sharpened our thinking, and we appreciate it.
Thanks very much. We'll be right back.